I would love to become a big celebrity in France, like Jerry Lewis or something like that, because they understand comedy.
Yeah, real geniuses like Jerry Lewis, Three Stooges, Casper Hauser,
Monsieur Hulot.
Basically, all the guys you see women talk about how they want to fuck on your timeline, those are all the biggest comedic stars in France. Mr. Bean, Mr. Magoo, the cat from the Paula Abdul video. They're all MC Scat Cat.
MC Scat Cat, yeah.
They're all comedic celebrities in France.
The Noid.
Well, the Noid is sort of like, he's sort of like a dark anti-hero in France. Mm-hmm.
Every girl's DM is talking about how they want to fuck the Noid and Huckleberry Hound.
Yeah, guys DM, you look beautiful, pimp. I would love to do hot yoga with you this weekend. Me, you plus Bikram equals great time. Girls DM, I want to be fucked sideways by three surviving members of Monty Python in a Chinese dragon costume. And the girls DM is just the nation of France.
Let's get this drinking bird going.
Yeah.
So this is an original Ciampa lineup, never before seen, never before happened. Me, Felix, and Virgil. Amber and Matt, they're furloughed because they're federal employees of the federal government. We won't say of which branch, but you know, they can't work.
Yeah. Lucky for me, the Iranian government, not furloughed. They're doing a great job.
So now we have a chance to do the kind of show that we've always wanted to do.
When the cats are away, the mice are going to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to do the show we always wanted to do, which is a Twitch stream of the drinking bird and those little balls that clack together on a desk. We're fun games like that.
Clackers, yeah.
Yeah. We're going to do a live Twitch stream of four drinking birds and our ongoing commentary on it.
Ooh, did that hoop and stick game arrive? Or?
Egg and cup. Egg and cup games.
I was actually a ranked Jax player until I said the N-word during a heated Jax moment.
We're going to do a rundown of all the best pogs. What kind of slammer that you need to like just really level up. We're going to be streaming all of it.
Because we know what the listeners want.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Matt's assumption is that our audience enjoys being yelled at for having a Snapchat or whatever, but no, they want to be indulged in their guilty pleasures.
Old Chapo, the superstructure is fucked. new Chapo, yo, this drinking bird finna get it if he keeps looking like that.
old Chapo, they're talking about shit like Norm Chomsky and Antonio Gramer.
Old Chapo talking about all these stupid Italian guys. Antonio Gramsci. Luigi Academicus. New Chapo talking about new academics that actually affect people's lives, like Mr. Bean and Marc Maron.
Mm-hmm.
Kanye, if he made a song about Marc Maron. I was in that pussy like Marc Maron. What the fuck?
Look, this guy's getting thirsty. Look.
he's getting close.
It's right there. It's about.
Oh no, dude!
Service.
He's doing it. He's doing it.
He's drinking the water.
He's doing it. Oh!
He's drinking the water.
Go off! Go off! Go off! Go off!
Well, I mean, I don't want to gamble too heavy on this the drinking bird material.
We don't want to sell. We don't want to like give this bit away for free.
Yeah,
like we're talking to studios about our drinking bird concept.
Let's paywall this.
Yeah,
let's paywall
the
drinking bird stuff.
Not even behind the $5 wall. Behind the special $1,000 wall.
So we mentioned Matt and Amber are furloughed right now because the federal government is officially shut down.
It is totally unprecedented, except it happened in 2013 for roughly the same reasons.
I have not been paying very close attention to this. Essentially, this is all over the proposed. Democrats want something to cover the Dreamers, right?
They want the Dreamers, and Trump took away the protections against deportation from the Dreamers that Obama put in through executive order.
Okay.
And these are people who came to the country as minors.
Right.
And they are the good immigrants in popular culture. They're the ones who work hard and serve in the military and go to college and things, unlike those other immigrants who are just human beings.
Yeah. Those other immigrants, they're not dying in wars. They're not starting a new fusion cuisine place you can go to feel good about yourself. Whatever can happen to them.
So that deadline is March for a legislative fix that's going to give either citizenship, a path to citizenship, or just permanent legal status for the Dreamers. That's March. That's imposed by the president. And Democrats have no real leverage here except the budget, where Republicans need their votes in the Senate in order to fund the federal government. And a little bit about this process. So Congress has to appropriate money to keep the government running, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they will do this by passing an appropriations bill. But in recent years, it's been harder and harder to pass an appropriations bill, especially because of these, you know, hardliners on the right wing who are
the Freedom Caucus.
Right. Or people like Rand Paul who say we need to reduce spending and the deficit and destroy Social Security and all that shit. Obviously, that's hypocrisy because all these people voted for the tax bill. So just total rank hypocrisy. So what Congress will do is pass what's called a continuing resolution, which is It could cover the entire fiscal year, or it could just be a stopgap measure that will just keep things humming along based on whatever the last budget said. And we passed, I think, two or three of these in at the end of last year, which imposes it's just a self-imposed deadline. The final deadline ran out this weekend on the Friday at midnight.
Yeah, most of the coverage of this I've seen from like the political media is like who's going to get the blame for it.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my predictions, so I'm prepared for it to be wrong. I picked the main event of the last night's UFC when I was on Go Off Kings, and of course I cursed it into being wrong. I'm wrong about everything, but also I'm right about this. There's like a lot of hay being made over like, oh well, it's the Republicans control both legislative houses and the presidency. The shutdown happened under them; they'll be blamed. Or will not enough Democrats voted for this? They'll be blamed. And I have to say, I don't think shutdowns register with people like they used to, because they're rooted. The sort of absurdity of a shutdown is rooted in your belief in norms. Like your belief that like, oh, the government should never stop working. Everyone should come together to just make sure at least the basic organs of state work. But now after Donald Trump has been president, everything is incredibly stupid. Roy Moore, the root beer vest pedophile, almost became a senator. I don't think these violations of norms work anymore. People are too atomized for enough like undecided voters to actually care about this.
In effect, it's like it's only non-essential things. I mean, it's just like the only thing that's really being affected by I mean, I'm sure there's probably some real example
of
how
stuff,
it sucks.
Especially
like,
as time goes on, it gets worse and worse.
But like right now, it's like, you know, you can't visit the Lincoln Memorial or something. Like,
I believe they're keeping the parks open, but they're just not having trash collection. Something like that.
If you're a fan of littering, now is the time to go hog wild.
But it's also things like a lot of the EPA, the Department of Education, which provides funding, especially for special needs students across the country. And a lot of the judiciary could shut down in, I think, a couple weeks. And right now, everything's just sort of running on fumes, in addition to like things that are mandatory, like, you know, Homeland Defense, the military. Like, these will keep humming. But and as well, the tens of thousands of government employees who are just getting fucked by this. Or either they have to come into work and will not receive a check, or they've been furloughed. So, I mean, it's a shitty situation all around, and it's obviously a failure of governance. I do think, you know, your average person, this is a Byzantine process, your average person who doesn't really follow this process isn't really going to have a big takeaway, except that, oh, shoot, I guess those Republicans fucked up again. How about that? Because that's really just been the story from the past year. Everyone who is like following this process to a certain extent has already made up their minds about who's to blame and who's not to blame. And most of that is falling onto congressional Republicans and the president.
Can you explain to me one of the lines I've heard or saw this week from like the sort of MAGA Trump people that I don't know what they're referring to? They keep saying release the memo. Do you know what they're talking about?
Kind of, yeah. There's this memo that supposedly shows that the FBI violated or what's the word? Abused the FISA court system. FISA courts are what they all just voted to renew, which are these secret Star Circle courts.
We talked about this the other week. This is the extension of like the ongoing warrantless NSA surveillance regime.
Yeah, I mean the whole thing is fucking fraudulent. Of course, the FBI abuses it, and they abuse it to terrorize Muslims, basically. And so this is all just like, this is just all total invented bullshit, because your average MAGA pig thinks that, oh, this is the memo that shows Obama ordered the FBI to surveil Donald Trump in order to make Hillary president. And it also contains evidence that Seth Rich was murdered or whatever. That's what they think it is.
Okay.
So it's just dumb shit.
All right.
But, you know, yeah, regarding the shutdown, while this is happening, while they're trying to pass a continuing resolution or a budget, in the background, Republicans are negotiating with Democrats in order to pass some kind of DACA deal. And I don't believe this deal has been released, but the rough outline of it is Democrats are going to concede more money for border security and
for the wall, right? Or they want to like at least like allocate money or make it seem so that Trump has the money to build his wall, even though nobody thinks this wall is actually going to get built.
Yeah, basically. Some money. And they also are going to tinker with the legal immigration process, which is neither here nor there, really. And in exchange, they get a legal status for the Dreamers, and Dreamers get potentially some kind of like 10-year pathway to citizenship. Something like that. That's the rough outline of it. This is being negotiated by the Gang of Six, which is Lindsey Graham, Flake, and four
gang,
Democrats.
Gang shit.
Let's get it! And the signals look good for a while, and they seem close to a deal until the president said, no, that's terrible, because he saw something on TV, or more precisely because of Stephen Miller, who's an out-and-out white nationalist, frankly, mm-hmm. and makes it impossible to deal with. So,
now, the other figure that I've been reading who's been like the one who's actually negotiating this stuff, who's like running point on it, is John Kelly, right? And he's the chief of staff, and he's the general. He's one of these, like, you know, he's the grown up in the room that I think gets interpreted quite a lot as like he's the kind of ruthlessly efficient military man who's there to like provide order and just make sure that the executive branch runs.
So here's what
what is weird about that is that I think people either forget or elide the fact that John Kelly is actually a highly ideological immigration hawk as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's more in the Stephen Miller camp than, you know, than Lindsey Graham, or than the people he's negotiating with.
So what happened was Trump had a meeting with Schumer, right? And the fear there was that Trump would strike a deal with the Democrats and then force congressional Republicans to go along with it. So Kelly dropped a dime to John Cornyn in the Senate and said, hey, this is going on, but we want to assure you there's not going to be a deal that comes out of this. So he helped scuttle the process. Miller is scuttling the process. And it's kind of at a logjam here. And the funding deadline came about, right? The House passed a stopgap measure into the middle of February that would have also fully funded CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, for something like 5 or 6 years. That's the sweetener. And they expected Democrats to just go along with that. However, Democrats are now more or less united in the demand to get legal status for the Dreamers. They do not want to do what they did at the end of December, which is just pass another stopgap, because their activists are getting more and more pissed off about this. And it makes sense that they should go to the mat for the Dreamers, because one, it's politically popular. Like, the vast majority of these people in the country say, oh yeah, that's reasonable. If anything, the conservative position should be to legalize the Dreamers or give them a path to citizenship. The liberal position or the left position should be full amnesty, frankly.
Right.
So they're already negotiating for what is essentially, what, something like a fifth of the undocumented population in this country. And as well, you know, even when they get a deal, I mean, I think a deal would be good, but then what do you do with that other four-fifths? What do you do with the Dreamers' parents if you're going to give them a deal that says, hey, you can stay in this country legally, but we're going to give more money to enforcement and ICE, who are going to go deport your parents?
This
Well, the Dreamers would be in favor of that, because then it's just like, no parents, party. Open house.
Be like a Beastie Boys video. I would like to, since Matt is not here, I would like to take the extreme pessimist position. So the polling in favor of Dreamers that we've seen is very positive, but it makes me wonder. That's polling the people who know what the Dream Act is.
Mm-hmm.
I hesitate to say that most voters know what the fuck DACA is, know about any of this, and forever positive DACA polls and forever positive those polls read Dreamers as, I don't know that undecideds are either knowledgeable of what it is or that they're anything beyond like immigration agnostic, and that it won't be the massive shot in the arm to the Democrats that they think this is.
Mm. I mean, I
hope that I'm wrong, but it seems like one of those things where it's like you have 50,000 screaming MAGA shitheads screaming about amnesty and posting pictures from like Ong Bak and saying that they're ISIS Mexicans coming in to do karate in Home Depot.
I saw a really good conservative meme today where it was a picture of Chuck Schumer, and then I think they had better than their usual Photoshop skills. It's Chuck Schumer, but his whole face is covered in those like MS-13 style tattoos.
Yeah. That's Chuck Schumer.
That's pretty cool, actually.
That is what he looks like. He just puts makeup on to hide it. You have 50,000 of those screaming people like on Twitter and like on all the conservative websites. And then you have like 100,000 resist people who I didn't really seem to give a shit about immigration until it became like this point that they would argue in response to Trump. And I wonder if this isn't just one of those cases of kind of like the shutdown of like the same people screaming the same things about each other getting polled. It pulls in a certain direction, but for the majority of voters, they're totally ignorant of the issue and it's not going to move anything.
Well, I mean, I have three responses to that. One is they should do it for moral reasons.
I agree.
Their
base
wants this and they need the base to come out and know that they're not getting hoodwinked like they've always been getting hoodwinked. The other is the people who are hardliners on immigration, the essentially white nationalists, are a very, very small minority. And it's frankly, the Democrats need to stop caping to these people and being afraid of them because they're always going to vote Republican. They should tell them, this reactionary white minority, to go fuck themselves. And the other is that, so in these polls, normally, it is about framing and perception, because in these polls, normally, they'll read like two statements, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, one, should people who illegally immigrated to the country as children and, you know, they work jobs or they go to college or something, should they be offered the chance to stay in the country legally? And the numbers for that are like 70-75%, because that's an overwhelmingly reasonable proposition for most people.
So, but I mean, will it be framed like that is the question, because Trump's polling was famously like completely tanked, like the lowest it had ever been for anyone at that point in the presidency, and every generic poll that showed like generic Democrat versus generic Republican was approaching double digits, like a slaughter. Now we see that House poll is narrowed to 5 points, and it's because enough people, not the majority of people, it's enough people have seen the Dow is up and they passed this tax bill. They don't know how any of this shit works. They literally just think, oh, Donald Trump pressed the jobs button with the tax bill and the stock market, this thing that I don't have any money in because I have a negative net worth. That means that the economy is doing well. Their lives are the same, maybe getting a little bit worse as it is for anyone who's like below middle class. But just the way that they process information is so A to B, they don't have an understanding of these like highly complex issues, but it still affects their perception of these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the thing. So obviously Republicans are trying to frame it right now as, oh, Democrats shut down the government. They refuse to let children have health care for the scary illegal immigrants, for the MS-13 guys. And I don't think that is a message that will break through or that anyone will remember come November, honestly. Like, ultimately, you can look at the shutdown of 2013. it what followed that was Republicans winning a massive historical victory in the midterm election. I generally think it's a wash, but ultimately the only thing that comes out in people's minds, because again, this is a very Byzantine process. People aren't going to hear, wait, Democrats did that for, they sold out children for illegal immigrants. Like that means anything or makes sense unless they're already a MAGA chud. I think at the end of the day, your average, like kind of out of touch person is going to look at this and say, oh wow, this is still a shit show. This is still pretty fucking incompetent, because you know, like you want to sit down and explain the budget process and reconciliation, all these things to people. Nobody's going to do that.
To depart slightly from like the this alleged deal and the negotiations about DACA and the wall or whatever, like going off of something Felix said about how people think Trump, you know, I keep hearing all the time that like, you know, the stock market's up, you know, unemployment is low, and Trump hit the jobs button. Yeah. When he got back in the White House, there was like a bit, it was covered in glass, and Obama was like, "Oh, let me be clear, I'm not going to touch that button, I'm not going to break the glass." Trump came in first day.
The only jobs I'm doing are the kind that I do in the back of a limo.
Did you guys get a chance to look at or the thing that the New York Times did last week, where they were like, or no, it was this week? They were like, you know, instead of in lieu of running our normal op-ed section on Thursday, we're only just going to reprint letters from Trump supporters.
Yes, yeah, like, yes, I saw the letter that I got published in the New York Times. My family is very proud of
me. It's on the refrigerator right now.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw the crayon drawing that they published.
These are like the sort of, I don't know, these are the New York Times reading Trump supporters who all consider themselves, you know, educated, successful, not like the oinking hogs that we usually are talking about, even though I regard them as exactly the same.
Yes.
I was struck by how basically all their reasons for why they like Trump and support Trump were all identical. And it all came down to something like, yes, they declaimed his boorish behavior, and they're like, I wish he wouldn't tweet. But they're like, hey, the bright side is the economy is back. It's better than ever. Unemployment's low. And they rattled off, like, he's getting things done, like the tax bill, which is good. He's getting rid of regulations, which are bad. And the other, like the wild card, that the thing almost everyone cited as like a net positive for like why they still support Trump despite some of the bad things, was moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. And these were all not like, you know, Orthodox Jews writing, and these were all just like, you know, like these are the suburban boat dealership type of people,
yeah,
who were like, they were really happy about moving the embassy to Jerusalem.
Yeah, I remember seeing that trope over and over again in the letters. It's like, hey, guess what? I'm not one of the shoeless rubes.
Yeah.
I'm a professor. Yeah, I live in a rich neighborhood.
Oh, I've written a novel.
I own a boat. Yeah. So I support Trump. Are you shocked by that? It's like, no, I'm not shocked.
Yeah.
There are plenty of shitheads like you.
No, he's like, I've been a college professor. I'm an author. I'm an entrepreneur. And that guy, most interestingly at the end, he was like, what Trump has done is like, we used to be so fragile. We'd be like, ooh, ISIS, ooh, you know, like, oh, global warming. And like now Trump is back and we don't have to be afraid anymore of like the scary things in the world. This is just, he literally said, chaos is just opportunity. And the people who love opportunity are capitalists. That man's name was Littlefinger.
That's what I think about Donald Trump, someone who has a very like steely-eyed look at the dangers of the world, takes them on very soberly.
Well, that was actually the other thing, in addition to moving the embassy to Jerusalem, they all said like he defeated ISIS. Like he finally let the generals do their thing.
Yeah, he had a side ISIS. Job as being the chief commander of the Syrian Arab Army and Hezbollah. It's good, you know, in the gig economy, you need a second job. Good for Donald Trump.
TaskRabbit?
Yeah, Donald Trump answered a TaskRabbit to lead the Hezbollah detachment in Syria.
You know, I do have 2 points about that economy thing, and this is something that a lot of people have identified as kind of a weird aberration of the Trump administration, is that the economy is doing very well, but Trump's approvals do not reflect that. And even his approvals on the economy, which are higher than his overall approval rating, does not reflect that.
Well, I mean, we should be clear about what the economy doing well means context. I mean, like, the stock market being up is like, you know, what percentage of Americans own stock?
100%.
It depends. A lot of people, I would assume, have stocks that are tied to the stock market. I have retirement funds that are tied to the stock market.
No, a lot of people do own stock, but it's in retirement funds, it's in mutual funds. And also, like, unless you're a day trader, the like year-to-date movement, the sort of day-to-day cycles don't actually mean a lot to you. I mean, it matters what it's going to be when you cash it out, which is like looking at things, we're definitely heading towards another recession.
Yeah, generally, like in a day-to-day, like, yeah, the Dow being up and unemployment being down is like, you know, a good thing, right? But like, really, does that mean the economy is healthy? Well, I don't think so. When we talk about unemployment, like the jobs that people have are like worse and worse and more and more precarious.
It's contract work. Their wages have not kept up with inflation. What's more is that employment and unemployment pool, it's smaller now because more people just dropped out of the economy after 2008.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at sort of the white-collar economy and also service positions, what's happened since 2007, 2008 is combining the jobs of like five people into one person who they work to the nub. And they'll pay them more, but they save money, you know, instead of the salaries or wages of five people. And what's more important, the benefits of five people they save money on. And we're in this swirling whirlpool, diarrhea whirlpool of cheap money and trading on the margins of things and the economy now sort of growing to be centered around these companies that just spent hundreds of billions of dollars of cheap credit to try to take over a marketplace under the understanding that once they achieve monopoly or oligopoly, that they will be able to charge whatever they want to the smaller and smaller pool of consumers that can actually afford those prices.
I think for like the average voter or like person does think that like, oh, like unemployment's down, like the economy is doing better, there are jobs, right?
Right.
And it's like, to me, like the only thing that would be like a meaningful indication of like an economy being strong is like what is like wages to productivity.
Right.
Like a successful economy to me would mean Americans are on the average being paid more and working less. Like,
right.
That to me would be a healthy economy. But the exact opposite is true. Just because they have a fucking job, I don't necessarily think that that's like an indicator of economic health or social health. Certainly not.
That's really the thing. I mean, you can look at the top line unemployment rate, but are you content if you're working in, say, an Amazon slave warehouse where you have to wear a diaper because your bathroom breaks are doled out to you irregularly?
By Alexa.
I mean, are you content with how the economy is going exactly? And does it matter to you what that top line number is? Are you even familiar with it? Does it matter to you what the Dow is at?
Well, I've noticed that, you know, Trump his sort of trolling tweet for the Women's March is that, like, more and more women are loving me because unemployment's down. He obviously didn't write that tweet, by the way. As just a side note, I really love how easy it is to tell which ones he writes and doesn't.
Yeah,
because, like, the people who write, like, the fake ones, they try to get his style.
Yeah.
They try to, like, ape it, but, like, it's never quite right. It's always a little too...
Yeah, you can never predict...
Overwritten.
You will never predict what the real Trump will put in all caps. You'll never guess what he's going to connect the larger issue to, whether it's, you know, a party that he went to in 1984.
What was the one you found the other day that you were like, if he was going to run on, like, this is before he was going to declare.
Who is paying for that tedious Smokey the Bear commercial?
yeah. He was complaining about
enough
Smokey,
already
about Smokey the Bear, but the forest fires, PSA.
that one is great if you want to be one of these people who diagnoses Trump with psychology. That just proves how senile he is. Because that was in early 2015. That is the exact type of thing an old person complains about. This I've seen this commercial so many times while watching the 15 hours of TV I watch every day.
Well, here's the thing: I support the message of the Smokey the Bear ads, but I don't support using sex appeal in advertising. It's too much. It's not appropriate.
This is another thing where you gaslight yourself with Trump, where I'm now convinced that, like, during the early 2015 part of the campaign, he had a feud with Smokey the Bear and was like, you know what? No one talks about this, but forest fires often control over vegetation. There are too many birds, okay? It's not nice. We don't want to say, you know, go out and say, oh, we love it when the birds burn to death. But when something craps on your car and there are too many invasive species,
Correct me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. But like I'm thinking of Smokey the Bear, and as sort of animal pitchman or cartoon characters goes, doesn't Smokey the Bear wear pants but no shirt?
Yes.
Yes.
So yeah. He's like he's
like Anthony
pants.
Kiedis.
Or Iggy Pop. So he's like, he's the opposite of other cartoon like you know, famously Mickey Mouse, you know, no pants. Donald Duck.
No, Mickey Mouse has pants.
Oh, right. Fuck.
Yeah. No, you're Donald Duck.
Think of Goofy. Does Goofy wear pants?
Yeah, Goofy wears pants.
Okay.
Goofy wears a turtleneck, a vest, a little hat. He sort of dresses like Jerry Adams on his off day. But a lot of animals do like that no shirt pants, like how 50 Cent would be when he first came out.
Yeah. Look, man, if you had a body like Smokey the Bear, you would not wear a shirt. You would look
You
would look for any opportunity to take your shirt off.
You're just waiting until like it turns like the thermometer goes to like 65, and then it's just all get it out.
Do you think that like Trump, the way that Trump sees the world is kind of like in Always Sunny where Charlie sees in cartoons? And like Trump like sees like Men's Fitness magazine and he just... his brain interprets it as Smokey the Bear is on the cover, and it's like, get a body like Smokey. And he's like, I don't get it. This is ridiculous. We were talking about how Eric Trump was like, my dad is the least racist person because he doesn't see color. He just sees green. And we were saying that that means that he thinks every person he's met in the last 10 years is the Grinch. He's like, Jared's going to be working on Christmas. He never celebrates Christmas because his people, the Grinches, they're great. Okay, look, there was one bad one, but my daughter is a Grinch. She converted
to being a Grinch. And their children will be beautiful piccolos.
Okay, look, you know, Jared's going to be working hard for you, and maybe if he makes peace in the Middle East, we will give him some roast beast.
But yeah, on the economy, I mean, I think the problems that are happening today are the same problems that people identified towards the end of the Obama administration. Even though unemployment's low, the quality of jobs are worse. It's Uber type fucking jobs. And as well, the if your
podcasting
and as well, if your health premiums are going up and the cost of living is going up, you're not getting ahead. You're not doing that much better.
Well, this is another refrain that you hear from like people who are like, you know, he may be rude and I may not like his character, but like, you know, he's done good. And like the tax cut, like, you know, you may, to you, big podcasting entrepreneur, $300 may not seem like enough, but for a working family, an extra $300 in the old pocket that Uncle Sam doesn't get a taste of.
That immediately go to servicing their debt payments.
Well, I was going to say, like, and then like, what's that $300 like, you know, as pays, like, you know, weighed against what you're already paying for fucking health insurance.
Yeah, that was another thing that I think was underexplored with the election. If you notice, like in the fall of 2016, people's premiums skyrocketed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, yep. You know, I
like right before the election, there was a big spike in the Obamacare.
And insurance
premiums.
Markets are worse than ever because of little things that Trump has done to fuck with them as executive orders and parts of the tax bill. But I do fear maybe that people are so atomized that they. Maybe the people that didn't vote or voted for Trump in these Rust Belt states where their premiums skyrocketed, they think, oh, he's still fixing Obamacare after Obama made my insurance more expensive. Or, you know, that I don't have to do the individual mandate anymore. He fixed
it. I think at some point like that breaks. At some point, you can't compartmentalize these things.
Oh, if it gets bad enough.
Look at what's going on in the coal areas and the manufacturing belt. Like Trump's main promise, he's going to bring back these high paying jobs, right? In the manufacturing industries where you don't need an education necessarily. The jobs that have been getting outsourced through these trade agreements.
The Boyd Crowders of the world will be put back to work.
The opposite is happening.
Yeah.
There are still layoffs. There are still, the carrier plan is having layoffs. And what's replacing them? Foxconn, as Matt was telling me the other day, Foxconn is going to go to Wisconsin and have a fucking suicide net factory.
But, you know, do these disaffected people, frankly, most of whom didn't vote in the first place, some of them broke for Trump, some of them broke for Clinton, some of them didn't vote. It depends on where you go. Do they shift to the left, or is it the story of what's happened in so much of America through deindustrialization that people just get so beaten down by their lives by having no solution that they just stop participating altogether?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I can't answer that question. It really depends on what kind of messages they get and whether or not there are people who can spread an alternate explanation for what's going on, one they've not been exposed to before. I mean, if you just leave things in a vacuum, it's going to go to the right. Because that's essentially...
We have a reactionary country.
Because that's the consequence of... That's the conclusion you draw based on everything this country has taught you and your experiences have taught you, especially growing up during the Cold War.
And, like, you know, on the baseline, we'll always default to the right because, like, even though these same people are getting laid off at their jobs, as we've talked about before, what Trump does offer is, you know, tangible, if not in a material sense, then certainly in a psychological one. As we've talked before, this chintzy brand of nationalism and kind of like, if you have nothing else, you know, at least we're America, and like that, like, you know, America is strong and good.
Right. I always hated that thing of, oh, they're voting against their own self-interest. And I always thought it was such an improper calculation because, yes, the Democrats offer them like a marginally better world. I don't say marginally as this huge attack on the Democrats. I say marginal because a lot of the economic solutions they're offered are around the margins. And for a lot of things, that's fine. Your life is built around the margins, especially in the economic sense. But you do often need a big down the middle, not centrism, but overall change. But offered marginal improvements or marginal stopgaps against the declining life expectancy and wages that have not kept up with the CPI, they're offered something that isn't exactly what their self-interests are, which is an eternal kingdom in heaven and an America built on blood and soil that they can be proud of. If you're given the choice of like, here's your same shitty life and, you know, maybe you'll be able to buy better insurance for some people that like will affect them a little more than others, or You are on God's right hand, smiting all the fucking ISIS terrorists and all the European pussies, and you will be in heaven with God forever because you stood on the side of righteousness. What are you gonna pick? What are you gonna pick? Are you gonna pick some? Are you gonna pick soaring language, or are you gonna pick? Frankly, what the other party filling doesn't out even know what they're selling.
Like the prospect of like making your life, I don't know, 2 to 5% better if you're willing to fill out like a zillion forms.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and then compare rates on like every different individual market like every single day.
And keep in mind, if you want to go to these economically depressed places and you want to bring people into your fold, you want to get them on your side, you can't just give empty promises. Because Democrats have been doing that for decades, and they don't buy it anymore. Because you have to actually explain why things can be different, or give another explanation, not a conservative explanation, for what's going on. And the labor movement has been pushing that explanation, that it's NAFTA. And people like Bernie Sanders push that explanation. It's the machinations of Wall Street. That's easy. These are easy enemies to identify.
And I do want to say, for anyone who's listening to get mad at us from the liberal or centrist side to say that we are hyper focusing on Appalachia, we're not, because you saw the same low level of engagement in Philadelphia in 2016. This is a working class problem. Working class people are unengaged. That doesn't mean fucking white working class. That means everybody. They don't vote at the numbers you think they should. And I know that because your calculations were hinged on them doing that, and they fucking didn't.
Not only that, hinges on them doing that, and then, as we've, you know, made note of and made fun of numerous times, that what did Schumer say? For every white working class voter, we
pick
lose,
up two
we'll
in the Philadelphia suburbs.
Rich Republican racists.
What a genius pragmatic move. We're gonna bet that country club Republicans are gonna be against racism.
Well, that is hilarious though about all the people who sneer at kind of like class politics as being a kind of sort of like underhanded way of promoting a kind of Herrenvolk white social democracy. It's like, well, all the people that are sneering at that were like actively courting the votes of rich racist Republicans.
And the deal they just tried to make was to give Donald Trump a symbol of racism. The same people that have spent this entire time, you know, going at Bernie Sanders or even further hating anyone who makes a joke they don't like, are defending Schumer for trying to give Trump the wall as part of the CR deal. And they say, you know, it won't actually affect immigration. It's symbolic. What the fuck was the point of all that during 2016 then? If it's okay to give Donald fucking Trump a symbol of racism, the thing he ran on. What was your point? It's almost like you have no fucking beliefs and you just want to flank against the left.
Let me ask. Am I the only one who thinks that Chuck Schumer is just not as crafty as that A. Wyatt Mann drawing of him makes him look?
I think
he's going to get fucked in these negotiations.
Oh, yeah. No,
well,
absolutely.
Can I ask a strategy, mindset, political tactics genius question?
Yeah.
Yes.
As it exists now, like, it seems like the Democrats are like, if they can get something for the Dreamers, they'll be like, okay, Trump can have his wall, on the assumption that, like, from this very kind of maybe not even incorrect technocratic view of things, that, like, the wall, let's be honest, probably won't get built anyway, even if they give him the fucking money for it.
Yeah.
There's a certain logic there. I wouldn't make that deal. Here's the thing. Would you make a deal if the deal was what they should be pushing for, which is full amnesty for everyone who's in America, and in exchange for that, Trump gets to build his stupid wall? Is that a good deal?
Yeah, I consider that a good deal for this reason. Here's how that frame has shifted. In 2013, Congress, or the Senate, passed by, I believe, 68 votes, a bipartisan bill that would have amnesty for the undocumented immigrants in this country. Not just Dreamers, just full amnesty. And the House under John Boehner, who is not a rigid ideologue like Paul Ryan is, did not even take it up. And it was dead. Now, they are struggling to pass even a compromise that would give legal status to a fraction of undocumented people in this country. I mean, the Democrats have ceded so much ground in these past few years, and I honestly think that the only way that they could claw back and try to win back this narrative is by making that big demand. In terms of a wall, I mean, for God's sakes, you know, Congress can appropriate money for something with such legislative language where it doesn't actually have to be spent. People expect that the next president will be a Democrat. And the next president can say, fuck it, we're just not going to build this fucking wall anymore, and fuck you. But they would have to have the political courage to say that and say fuck you to the MAGA white nationalist chunks.
Well, we have talked, we have joked before in the past, perhaps even on the show, that like the savviest thing for Trump to do politically would just be to like go to a border state and have like a tiny section of the wall built and be photographed in front of it doing his stupid thumbs up wearing a hat.
Yeah.
And that was basically all he'd need to do.
Yeah. He could just say he already built it. They'll believe it.
There.
It doesn't matter.
Built. Yeah.
It doesn't matter because it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't. There's already portions of a fucking wall. I mean, what's more disgusting, frankly, is ICE. And no Democrat should be voting to fund ICE. And I think that the demand that we should have is a Democratic caucus that says defund ICE, because these people are actual fascist pigs.
This is like the...
You saw that video. You saw that video the other day.
This is a big thing today.
That's one of the most disgusting, despicable things I've ever seen in my life. These fucking individuals who are all neck folds, just heads full of neck folds, pouring out the water that these... I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of this.
There are groups that leave water and supplies in the desert. Because, like, keep in mind, the U.S.-Mexico border is one of the deadliest borders in the world in terms of how many people die every
year. Thousands of people in the past two decades die. And all they do is they leave out jugs of water, some food, some blankets, because it gets very cold there at night. I think. I forget.
Deserts do get very cold at night.
Yeah. Okay.
that's a fact.
Bill Nye, science guy.
Bill. Right. And these ICE guys, they border guys. These pigs. Yeah. They go around there and they just pour out the water or kick it over. And they film themselves doing it like they don't care. Because they don't care. Because they will never, ever be punished for it.
ICE is... I mean, law enforcement in general is probably maybe the worst slice America has to offer. And of that slice, ICE could be the worst.
ICE is definitely the worst, because I firmly believe the people that join ICE were too fucking stupid or flunked the psych test to join every other branch of law enforcement. This is the absolute dregs.
They tried to join
since high school. Is only like, you know, their ambition was just to make life hard on other people.
Yeah, they've wanted to be someone who could tell. It's like Mullins thing. I'm going to show you who's never been boss.
Yeah, exactly.
It's people who couldn't even get into like the special SWAT team that they have for the Department of Education.
went into ICE.
Anyway, but here's how I see things going on. You know, wheeling back to the budget thing, the Democrats have only one card to play because they need 60 votes to overcome a filibuster to pass the budget. And when they tried late on Friday night to pass the House bill, which was just another temporary extension into the middle of February, five Democrats voted for it. Four Republicans vote against it. And the Democrats are the usual suspects, the Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Manchin and these red staters. And our newest red stater, Doug Jones, of course.
Who? Doug Jones.
He's giving out his phone number.
8-5-0-0-4.
Doug Jones.
Hit Doug Jones up on the low. Mike Jones about to compromise because the CR about to blow.
And the-
back then, hoes didn't want me. Then Roy Moore was a pedophile.
Well, and then, back then, Hoes Didn't Want Me should have been Roy Moore's song, actually.
Holy shit. Yeah. Now they still don't want me.
And the Republicans were Graham and Flake, who are still passing, trying to push the bipartisan deal, and Mike Lee and Rand Paul, who are there from the right wing saying, we're spending too much. We need to pass a serious budget that cuts everything.
By the way...
who, of course, voted for the tax
bill. By the way, it just came out today. Finally, we know what the Rand Paul beating was about. It was because he was literally piling brush too close to his neighbor's yard.
That is real...
suburban mindset.
I love how, like, the deeper into suburban mindset you go, you just become like Croats and Serbs in the 90s.
It's the dumbest grievance, like, just the, like, micro differences.
Oh my god, no, did you see also this week Rand Paul was like doing his there was some hearing about the opioid crisis,
yeah,
right? And as Rand Paul loves to do, he loves to tout that he's a doctor in quotes, yeah. That he went to medical school.
I went
to Hollywood Upstairs Medical College.
Read these letters on the wall. It says NAP.
No. And Rand Paul was testifying about how opioids are overprescribed, and he was like, as I think you might know, recently I know a thing or two about pain, and I think you should just. I've just been taking aspirin. It hurts every time I breathe.
Yeah, we're saying leave that lean shit behind in 2017. R.I.P. Fredo Santana.
Seriously, though.
No, seriously, R.I.P. Fredo Santana. Don't do lean.
I would like to try it. I'm not saying I'm going to, you know, do it as much as.
Oh, no, I meant the listeners.
Oh, okay, yeah, not us. Yeah.
People who can handle it.
Yeah.
So the Senate couldn't pass it. The deal that the Gang of Six is working on, they have apparently gotten a promise from McConnell to bring a DACA deal to the floor on February 8th. So what could happen possibly Monday is both houses will just pass another continuing resolution until the 8th and then wrap all of that together. That's a possibility. But when right now everyone's sort of entrenched and they're playing this blame game, and I say Democrats win it because the Republican leadership has been, one, the Republicans control the entire government, and two, because Republicans have just been so fucked up for this past entire year that it's driving these suburban voters whom Hillary banked on into the arms of Democrats. They're the ones who...
Interesting you're saying that. Matt's not here. I'm going to fill in his role and just go, no, they won't. Joe Arpaio is going to be president. Shit world, hellscape. 2018.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's powering this Democratic wave that's building right now? It's two things. One, it's the standard Democratic base that's engaged and coming out. And two is these educated, upscale suburbanites are actually appalled by the government, not necessarily because they disagree with conservative dogma, but they just don't like the way it's operating. And they're willing to vote for Democrats who position themselves as the rational ones. I'm not saying that produces a good Democratic caucus, but if your short-term goal is we have to take control of Congress, then sure, you can rely on that. And this shutdown is only going to encourage both of those trends. So the DACA deal... I do just have one final thought on this, and you're seeing the blame game go around, and right-wing people are very fond of pointing out now that oh, Republicans can't just pass it alone. They need Democratic votes. Therefore, it's the Democrats' fault. You might be wondering why they don't use reconciliation to pass this. Reconciliation is a legislative procedure where that the certain bills involving the budget, spending, and deficit cannot be filibustered. You can pass that with a simple majority in the Senate. That's what it's there for. The reason why, and this is incredibly important and not a lot of people are talking about this, the reason why you can only use reconciliation once each fiscal year. And the Republicans already used it on the tax bill. That's how they pushed it through. That's why they have to get Democrat votes here. And if they had just used reconciliation for the budget as it's supposed to, they could pass whatever budget they want.
Well, it shows their real priorities. Well,
exactly. It's right? Their priorities. So it's not that the Democrats are holding the federal government hostage for dreamers. It's that Republicans already did that for a $1.5 trillion tax cut, a wealth transfer to the upper class.
By the way, the Democrats absolutely should hold the federal government hostage
absolutely.
For the dreamers, not just the dreamers, but all illegal immigrants.
It's their only, honestly, it's their only card to play. And I am honestly scared that Schumer is going to fuck it up and he'll play that card too early, or he'll agree to a budget deal that doesn't guarantee a dreamer passage, but just guarantees consideration of it. You need some kind of large bill because Ryan has to get that pass in the House and the president has to sign it. I think what Schumer should try to do here, and I'm just thinking out loud here, is get a bipartisan bill to the floor of the Senate, have every Democrat vote for it and enough Republicans to vote for it, or just push it through fast enough so that no real filibuster can emerge there that's going to fund the government, tie that to CHIP, tie that to Dreamers, and say, that's it. That's the only vote we're doing. The House, you either pass that or fuck off, because we're not passing anything else. And the president, you sign it or not, or else you own the shutdown. And that's it. That's the only real way to play hardball here, because there's a deadline of early March for the Dreamers. And the president can, at any given time, reinstate Obama's executive action. And from his prior statements, he doesn't actually give a shit about any of this. He doesn't actually despise the Dreamers. He just believes whatever the last thing he heard was. It might be from Stephen Miller. It might be from John Kelly. It might be from fucking
from Brian
Fox and
Kilmeade.
Friends. Yeah. So there is, so I mean, you can see it in the genuine fear of people in the White House that, or Republicans in Congress that, oh fuck, if he talks to this genius Chuck Schumer, he might be convinced by this charismatic heavyweight. We can't let this happen again.
Chuck Schumer will use negging and Keno to get Trump to give away the whole store.
Chuck Schumer in like the steampunk mystery getup.
He's wearing goggles and a fur top hat.
Oh, what is he going to say to neg Trump? He's going to say, it's going to be something like you look like you've lost weight.
Keep in mind, though,
that will work.
Keep in mind, though, that the only way the Democrats in the Senate, their bargaining position is strong, is if those five Democratic senators don't vote against the rest of their caucus. That's Manchin, Heitkamp, Donnelly.
Don't hold your breath on that.
McCaskill.
Yeah. Whoops.
McCaskill and Jones.
Okay. Well, that's a dicey prospect.
That's a tall order.
Yeah. Five pimps.
But that's really it.
Four lions.
If that's your only card to play, if that's your only leverage, you have to use it as much as you can. Maybe I think as a practical matter, they'll just pass another CR, and then still try to figure out the immigration thing. Who knows what Trump does, honestly, and who knows what Ryan does.
Moving on from the machinations of Congress, the budget,
Game of Thrones,
and this Game of Thrones that they're all playing. You win or you cry,
or you tweet.
We talked a little bit before about this kind of it's a phrase we've used before on the show, blood and soil nationalism, that I think does sum up like a certain kind of nation or resurgent. I wouldn't say nation, resurgent fascism in America. I'd like to segue now into a group of people that represent, I won't say blood and soil nationalism because I don't think it's quite accurate. I'm going to try to come, I would say more like cum and belly button lint nationalism. And I'm referring, of course, to the an event, a gala event held here in New York City last night. Perhaps you were familiar with it. I mean, we were in attendance.
Yeah, we were performing.
We were the VIP, you know, honored guests and speakers. I'm talking, of course, about Mike Cernovich and his Night of Freedom in New York City.
Just one night? Because I think every night is a night of freedom. Well,
this was such limited freedom and so few of it.
This was. Did you guys catch any of that?
I did. There is one thing that I know we will be talking about, though, with it.
We'll What's get that?
To the Chelsea Manning thing.
So the after story to this apparently was that Chelsea Manning showed up to the event.
As two Cub reporters from BuzzFeed reported on in incredibly nuanced and correct ways.
What do we make of this? Like, Chelsea do better? Chelsea doesn't matter? Chelsea, come on, Chapo.
So, like, the entire thing with it is murky. I mean, Chelsea posted that she was protesting. There were people there who were protesting that say they, like, you know, Chelsea came up, talked to them. But then there's also that picture of Chelsea with Jack Prilosec and Cassandra Fairbanks and whatever. And it's like...
There was a photo of her giving the thumbs down, though.
Right.
So you have to weigh that against
I mean, I think you got to say it's like bad optics. But I also think, like, the response to it, which, you know, from a lot of the left is either like, no, this is perfect. She did the perfect thing. There are no bad optics here. Or, I told you she fucking sucks. She's a piece of shit. And the response from liberal quarters, which is like, oh, they probably went there to do Russia stuff together because they all like Russia.
But that's the-
and it's all moronic because I don't know. I've been thinking about this and I've been thinking about Chelsea. And I think that Chelsea sort of burst onto the consciousness of the very online left, ourselves included, because she did something very heroic and very selfless and was, yes, nearly tortured to death for 7 years for it. And because of the stupid way that we process people we like, we've decided after that it's not just a person that we admire who does things that a person would do, that they are a living icon of everything that we believe in. So if they do something that on first glance is like it leaves bad optics, that it's actually correct, or on the other hand, if you put somebody up that much, if you put them on that much of a pedestal, if you make them so inhuman, dehumanization works in both ways, both in making someone subhuman or angelic, literally having no human qualities, it will crush you into disappointment so much that you'll come out spitting venom or at worst become totally disengaged. And I think the thing that no one is saying is that maybe this person who was stuck in solitary for 7 years, maybe they're having some trouble. You know, maybe they're having some trouble in the fucking world. And I have to say it, like, kind of annoyed me a lot seeing, like, Neera Tanden go, interesting. This is probably part of her plan to murder Ben Cardin. And it's like, is it that? Is it that she has a comprehensive plan? Or is it that you have a worldview you never interrogated and maybe this person made a mistake or did something stupid because maybe her engagement with the world is a little off from what you think it may be because your boss locked her in solitary for 7 fucking years while you were being paid in benzodiazepines. And, you know, to that end, to that entire quarter who is spouting steam out of their fucking noses about this as if it confirms any of their fucking craven madmen writings, choke on a fucking Franzia bladder. But, you know, I do want to say to everyone in our quarter, like, you know, this is not to say don't criticize her. This is, if what she says is true, this is bad optics. She did something stupidly. If you take that one picture and you go, oh, maybe she like knew Cassandra Fairbanks or something. Yeah.
Because like Cernovich and McGinnis and all of them are using her appearance there to be like, oh, like, you know, like, hey, we were all nice to her. Like, hey, if we were really Nazis, like, you know, would we have been mean to Chelsea or whatever?
Right. And I think it's that one is weird because everyone is like everyone is furious at Chelsea for, oh, you legitimize them. And it's like, okay, but then what do you say about like the New York Times and everything? Because how many articles have we seen about how what a genius
or like that idiot BuzzFeed reporter? Like they interpret like you know they whether it's true or not, like they have no problem going to these events and schmoozing with these people and giving them a platform or whatever. My general opinion is that like being photographed with these people in any way or just giving them any kind of...
Oh, yeah. She shouldn't have done that at all.
She shouldn't have done it.
About the Freedom Night, I just have one other thing. Can we listen to a little bit of the musical act?
Oh, Milk and Cook?
Yeah, because I found it so... didn't read as music. Can we just hear a snippet of it?
It's quite honestly like the worst garbage I've ever heard in my life. It's like this kind of like EDM music that's written for a car commercial.
Imagine if Diplo made music in the universe of the movie Equilibrium, where he had to take a pill that suppressed his emotions. That's what Milk and Cook sounds like.
But like Milk and Cook, the actual act seem to be these like twin-cest Hitler Youth guys. Like,
they're the Property Brothers' sons.
No, they're Prussian Blues brothers.
Chris makes a very, I think, astute point that this is their single is called Joy District. That is where the Nazi SS Joy Division was held.
Oh, okay.
It was like the community in which, you know, all those wonderful gals.
Big post-punk fans.
Set up, yeah.
Yeah. This has it has the like sort of raw sexual excitement of KDFM or Kraftwerk and the fast tempo beats of Jimmy Buffett.
This is the kind of music you put on when you're trying to seduce a Sibian.
God, did you guys see the thing this week where this guy Mark Stein was on Tucker doing his, like, he's the new 1488 beat reporter for Tucker?
Yeah, dude, I catch all every episode of Tucker.
So I'm not there,
TiVo-ing.
This clip got passed around a lot, and he's this, like, sort of Canadian Muppet who often is the sub co-host for Rush Limbaugh. He's been around for a long time.
He's a big sub.
He's been like a National Review guy
for
a long time.
He's Rush Limbaugh's pleasure boy.
Yeah. He's a Rush pig. So he was on Tucker and he was in this clip that had been passed around a lot where he says that, like, you know, basically says demography is destiny and that, like, in the future of Arizona is Hispanic. And as such, that effectively means that the border has been moved north. And like, he's lamenting the fact that, like, the Southwest is. has a lot of Spanish speakers in it, which is fucking funny because the past was also literally Mexico. But I bring this up only because I tweeted about this earlier in the week, but I really want to make this known. I want to get this spread as far and wide as possible. Mark Stein cut an entire album called Feline Groovy that is his sort of like, you know, when Seth MacFarlane like makes people come to his parties and do his like lounge lizard character and like sing croon to them.
I didn't know that, but I would like an invitation to that.
He does that kind of like pseudo like fake lounge lizard jazzy like swinging kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does all songs about cats.
Mark Stein is an amateur lounge singer who sings about cats.
Of the jazzy songs that are all about house cats.
Can I put one on? Is there a track that I can listen to?
It's called Chris. Put on I Taught a Putty Cat. Oh, yeah. you bump that shit. Sting should sue him for this.
I thought I saw a pussy cat a creeping up on me.
Wow.
I thought I saw a pussy cat. 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 I thought I saw a pussy cat a creeping up on me. I did. I saw a pussy cat as plain as he could be. Pussycat is very.
All right, but you can turn it off now.
Guys, that was Olver's new concept album.
Yeah, there's a whole. Everybody bumped that feel and groovy. No, it's like I bring this up because, you know, Mark Stein has been a guy who was like proto alt-right before that it was even a thing. He wrote a whole book about how Europe is being outbred by Muslims and whatnot. And he's very much this
but
kind
he likes cats as much as Muslims.
Back to the beginning. Yeah, the putty tat won't touch the Quran.
He's trying to get the putty tat to step on the Quran. I thought I saw a putty tat saying Allah.
I bring this up because in the concept is like these are people, whether they are the Knight for Freedom people or the slightly more upscale, sophisticated version and like the sort of dad version of that represented by Mark Stein. These are people who are the self-appointed defenders of Western civilization and Western culture. And they lament that it's being diluted by multiculturalism and diversity. And they hate that. But I think it just absolutely bears, and maybe it's an obvious point, but like it really bears stressing. This is the culture they want. They're like the culture that they are actually want and defending is not marble statues or like great works of literature or Shakespeare or Charles Dickens. It's this. It is the most chintzy, corny bullshit imaginable. This is what they feel safe with, and this is what all of our culture would be like if they had even an ounce of power.
You know what it is? Every single one of these guys is Gail Bedecker. by the way, AMC replaying all the Breaking Bads this month. 5th anniversary of Breaking Bad. 10th anniversary.
So, yeah. Did you?
Walter, why are you coming into my apartment at this hour? Walter, oh, that's a beautiful handgun. I also exercise my right to defend myself in a well-regulated militia. Oh, no, Walter, what are you doing? Oh, Walter, you've shot me in the brain.
It was Jesse,
God damn it.
Right, okay.
And also, Gail didn't have a weird southern
I was
accent.
Making him Rand Paul. Look, I fucked that one up. It can't all be like the Rand neighbor sketch that I didn't write, that I
that's
just came up with
for the blooper spot. Reel.
Yeah, whatever.
Right. Putting together the best of 2018 early.
Real quick before we end the show, last week you talked about how my girl Stormy, and we said that like that wouldn't even be a thing in another week, and I'm actually been surprised how much it sort of clung on a little bit.
Yeah, I'm still jacking off to it.
Yeah, we're still all watching her movies together.
Me and my boys autofocus.
We still on that Bob Crane tip, son.
Crane gang.
Carpenter, Crane. Gang.
Gang shit. Feel on your homeboy's thigh.
Group grope.
Yo,
shit.
Nut on your boy right now.
I don't want to stress this too much. I just want to point out that it's largely still in the news because of this in-touch interview with Stormy. I got to say, feather in our cap, check in column Chompo, another one of our jokes, not jokes, one of our theses, one of our erudite visions of the world and our understanding of how things work and how people really are confirmed as true. Trump asexual. Trump does not fuck. Trump literally, Stormy said, they watched 3 hours of Shark Week together.
No, he did every sexual position. Standing handshake, sitting on the chaise lounge, watching Access Hollywood, watching Ibiza beach parties on E!
What I love so much about that, where like, yeah, you're paying $100,000 to a porn star for the girlfriend experience. That's the real girlfriend experience. Just watching Shark Week on a couch.
Trump is going to pay Riley Reid to act out cat person with him. Very, very good story. All men should read this. Okay, great. All right. Make America great again.
So, yeah.
Trump, before we get out of here. I just want to give a big congratulations to this season's NFL conference champs, the
New England Patriots
and the
Philadelphia Eagles.
Chris, please fill in these when the games are over.
What's the score of the Patriots game, by the way?
Oh, the score is
Patriots 24
to
Jaguars 20.
Wow.
By the way,
see that coming.
Those are the winners, but, you know, big compliments to the
Jacksonville Jaguars,
who played hard down at
Gillette
Stadium.
Yeah, well, he's no Jake Plummer.
But at the end of the day, that game came down to
who wanted it more.
Yeah, we're going to look so fucking smart when this comes out.
The Bitcoin price is
$11,198.01.
And now is the time to
buy.
Take that sound investment advice to the bank. Just again, one final thing, and this is absolutely the last thing we're saying on this week's show. Just want to give a big congratulations to our boy, Matt Chrisman, for definitely winning the gaming debate. Stop right now.